Will the House come to order? Will the members please indicate their presence by voting? Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk take the roll?
25 members present.
We have a quorum present to conduct business. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Representative Taylor is excused from the call of the House today. Representative Miller is excused after 6:35 p.m. I move and ask unanimous consent that Representative Cato will also be excused because she is ill.
Representative Cato is ill. Thus being ill, she's excused from the call of the House. Our chaplain today is Reverend John Page of the Douglas Methodist Church. Would the members please rise for the invocation?
Let's pray. We would ask you, Lord, to assist us in making this moment more than just a mere gesture to custom or convention, but a real experience for each of us in this place as we call on you for guidance and help this day. As we go through this day, help us not to break faith with any of yesterday's promises, nor leave unrepaired any of yesterday's wrongs. Reveal to us what we can do to make Alaska a better place for people to live in. That the down payment made by the countless numbers of both Native and Pioneer may not have been made in vain. Today, we would claim your promise that if anyone lacks wisdom, let them ask of God, who gives liberally to all, and it shall be given them. You know how much we need that kind of wisdom. May we all be willing to ask for it and eager to have it. In Christ's name, amen.
Representative Frank, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance?
Allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Representative Martin.
Mr. Speaker, I move and ask unanimous consent to prayer be spread on the journal.
Are there any objections as to having the prayer spread across the journal? Hearing no objections, so ordered. Would the clerk at this time please certify the legislative journal for the 93rd legislative day?
As chief clerk, I certify as to the correctness of the journal for the 93rd day.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House journal for the 93rd legislative day as certified be approved.
Are there any objections as to the correctness of the journal before you? Hearing no objections, the journal stands approved. Do we have any guests for introduction today? Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We have a guest page today. She's a constituent of Representative Menard and the other guy over there, Representative Larson. Gina Anderson.
Representative Boucher.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would like to introduce one of my constituents, doing a great job in home teaching from the Central Correspondence Study. First time down in Juneau in about 22 years, Gloria Stetson.
Representative Springer.
In Gallery A, I got a constituent and a friend of mine with strong political interests from Nome, Lincoln Clegg.
Representative Frank.
Mr. Speaker, also in Gallery B, another person down from Fairbanks with strong political interests. We have an assemblyman and city councilman and state house candidate, Jerry Norm.
Any further guests for introduction? Messages from the governor.
Dear Representative Grusendorf, on this date I have signed the following bill and am transmitting the engrossed and enrolled copies to the Lieutenant Governor's Office for permanent filing. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 55, Resources Amended House, establishing the Minto Flat State Game Refuge and providing for an effective date, Chapter 18, SLA 1988. Signed sincerely, Steve Cooper, Governor. I have no further messages from the Governor, Mr. Speaker.
Messages from the Senate.
The Senate has approved the following citations and they've been sent to enrolling. Honoring the Bristol Bay Angels boys basketball team, AA tournament champions. In memoriam, Evely A. Azar, and honoring Jim H. Branson. The Senate has concurred in the House amendment to committee substitute for Senate concurrent resolution 54, Labor and Commerce, thus adopting committee substitute for Senate concurrent resolution 54, Labor and Commerce amended House, recognizing the importance of secretaries, certified professional secretaries, and professional legal secretaries, and requesting the governor to designate April 25th through the 29th, 1988, as State Secretaries Week, and April 27, 1988, as State Secretaries Day. The Senate has concurred in the House amendment, thus adopting House Committee Substitute for Senate Bill 190, Resources, an act establishing the Point Bridget State Park and providing for an effective date, and adopted the House Letter of Intent. The Senate has passed the following, and they are transmitted for consideration. Committee substitute for Senate Bill 371, Finance, by the Finance Committee, an act relating to alcoholic beverages in an area that has prohibited or restricted the sale of alcoholic beverages by local option election and to delivery, purchase, and municipal regulation of alcoholic beverages.
Three standing committees, Health, Education, and Social Services, Judiciary, and the Finance Committee.
Senate Bill 414, by the Rules Committee, by request of the Governor, an act relating to foreign trade zones and providing for an effective date.
Labor and Commerce and State Affairs.
I have no further messages from the Senate, Mr. Speaker.
Do we have any other communications that should come before this body?
We've received from the Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, Alaska Marine Highway System, the annual traffic volume report, 1987. We've also received the annual report to the legislature, 1987, Office of Alcohol, ISM and Drug Abuse, Department of Health and Social Services. These reports are on file in the Speaker's office. I have no further communications, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to, on the daily order of business, to reports of standing committees.
The Rules Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution 41, proposing an amendment to the Uniform Rules of the Alaska State Legislature relating to deadlines for session work. Recommends it be replaced with the Rules Committee substitute with the same title and do pass. The report was signed by Navarre Chairman, concurring Navarre, Grunberg, Pettijohn, Martin, Hoffman, and Boucher. Grusendorf has no recommendation. House Concurrent Resolution Number 41 has no further referral. The Hess Committee has considered House Concurrent Resolution 55, recognizing April as National Alcohol Awareness Month. Recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by the co-chairs, Ellis and Kopanen, concurring Kopanen, Ellis, Hudson, Phillips, Hanley, Grunberg, and Donnelly. House Concurrent Resolution Number 55 has no further referral. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Joint Resolution 72, Residential Real Estate Market, and recommends it do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, concurring Ellis, Davidson, Menard, Boucher, Kopanen, and Donnelly. House Joint Resolution Number 72 has a further referral to the Finance Committee. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered House Joint Resolution 73, urging the Federal Home Loan Bank Board to consider extension of assistance to Alaska financial institutions similar to the Board's Southwest Plan. Recommends it be replaced with the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute with the same title. It's reported back as follows with a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, signing due pass, Kopanen and Boucher, having no recommendation, Furness and Donnelly. House Joint Resolution Number 73 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 229, Homicide by Abuse, recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute with a new title and due pass, attaches 3-0 fiscal notes and 1-0 note with analysis. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing due pass, Adams, Pershaw, Larson, Swackhammer, Boyer, Frank, Wallace, and Rieger, having no recommendation, Gall, Brown, and Davis. House Bill 229 has no further referral. The Rules Committee has considered House Bill 424, State Board of Education, recommends it be replaced with the Rules Committee substitute with a new title and due pass. The report was signed by Navarre Chairman, concurring Navarre, Grunberg, Martin, Grusendorf, Hoffman, and Boucher. Pettijohn has no recommendation. House Bill 424 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered House Bill 461, increasing the penalties for repeat convictions for the crimes of theft and concealment of merchandise. Recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute with the same title. It's reported back as follows with a fiscal note and a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Adams Chairman, signing due pass. Adams, Swackhammer, Boyer, Rieger, and Frank. Having no recommendation, Porcheau, Larson, Gall, Wallace, Brown, and Davis. House Bill 461 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered committee substitute for Senate Bill 356, Labor and Commerce, relating to the procurement preference for state agricultural and fisheries products, recommends it be replaced with a House Committee substitute by the Finance Committee with the same title, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Adams Chairman, concurring Adams, Porcheau, Larson, Swackhammer, Davis, Boyer, and Rieger. Senate Bill 356 has no further referral. The Finance Committee has considered Senate Bill 463, unused airline tickets, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by Adams Chairman, concurring Adams, Porcheau, Larson, Swackhammer, Boyer, and Rieger. Davis has no recommendation. Senate Bill 463 has no further referral. The Hess Committee is considered committee substitute for Senate Concurrent Resolution 35, State Affairs, Alcohol-Related Birth Defects Awareness Week, and recommends it do pass. The report was signed by the co-chairs Ellis and Kopanen, concurring Ellis, Kopanen, Hudson, Phillips, Hanley, Gruenberg, and Donnelly. Senate Concurrent Resolution Number 35 has no further referral. I have no further standing city reports, Mr. Speaker.
Reports of special committees?
I have none, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction of citations and resolutions.
Citation honoring Ranald Macy Denny, Sr. by Representatives Taylor Sund and Senator Jones.
Rules for calendaring.
I have no resolutions for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
Introduction, first reading, and reference of House bills.
House Bill 558 with a governor's letter and a zero physical note with analysis by the Rules Committee by request of the governor. An act relating to bonds of contractors for public buildings and works and providing for an effective date.
Two standing committees, Labor and Commerce and Finance.
House Bill 559 by the Community and Regional Affairs Committee. An act exempting certain interests in low-income housing from municipal taxation and providing for an effective date.
Community and Regional Affairs and the Finance Committee.
I have no further bills for introduction, Mr. Speaker.
This brings us down to the consideration of the daily calendar. Would the clerk please make reference to the first item on that calendar?
House Bill 389 by the Rules Committee by request of the Governor. An act relating to recovery of state costs for oil and hazardous substance releases and providing for an effective date. The Resources Committee has considered the bill and recommends as follows with a zero note with analysis. The report was signed by Cotton Chairman, signing due pass, Herman and Son. Having no recommendation, Springer, Hoffman, Pierce, Navarre, Cotton, and Davidson. The Judiciary Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a committee substitute by the Judiciary Committee with the same title and due pass. The report was signed by the Vice Chair, Omer. Signing due pass, Omer, Gruenberg, Navarre, and Cotton. Taylor has no recommendation. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with a Judiciary Committee substitute and due pass. The report was signed by Adams Chairman, concurring Adams, Porcheau, Larson, Gall, Boyer, Wallace, and Frank. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the House adopt the Judiciary CS for House Bill 389.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the CS Judiciary? Hearing no objections, the committee substitute Judiciary has been adopted. Does the clerk have any pending amendments upon her desk?
I have an amendment number 1 by Pettijohn to page 1, and it is being duplicated, I think, right now.
Okay, the amendment appears to be rather lengthy, so will the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, the clerk made reference to amendment number 1. Representative Pettijohn.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment.
Hearing objections.
Mr. Speaker, what this amendment does is basically broaden the bill. The bill as written allows the state to lien property owned by someone who the commissioner determines to be liable for the oil and hazardous substance release. And I thought as long as we're going to have the commissioner to decide who's liable for something and lien their property, why limit it to release of oil and hazardous substances? Why not have the commissioner decide anybody who's liable for anything? And we'll lien them. And I would like to know why we're gonna give the commissioner the ability to lien people that release hazardous substances, but we're not going to give them the power to lien anybody else. Seems to me if we're going to have them liening people, he ought to be able to lien anybody he wants.
to Amendment Number 1. Any further debate? Representative Sund.
I speak in opposition to the amendment. At the same time, Mr. Speaker, maybe explain a little bit about the bill. The bill, as originally introduced, allowed the state to take a lien. This is on spills of hazardous substances and waste, and allowed a priority lien to be filed, and we changed it to just have a pure lien. It has to come in line behind every other lien that's on file and record. I think it ought to stay limited to the issue of oil and hazardous substances. I think that's where we're into these emergency issues of going out trying to clean up something, and we have to go into the emergency funds and that stuff. The rest of the issues, I think we can just go through the normal judicial procedure and get a judgment, go ahead and execute on the judgment. The state is not precluded from doing that. I don't see the necessity to expand this bill in the manner that it's proposed in the amendment, would propose the amendment.
Any further debate on Amendment Number 1? Mr. Minority Leader.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I was just trying to make a point by this amendment, and it doesn't seem to me that there is any justification we're to allow a commissioner this kind of power, unilateral power. He can use this in ways which could be extremely punitive, under his sole discretion, with no controls, no hearings, no findings, nothing. It's just the commissioner takes a look at a situation, and he decides somebody's liable, and bingo, all their property's lien. And that's not due process, Mr. Speaker. I would suggest there's a constitutional argument against this process. Everybody's entitled to due process of law. There is no process at all in this bill. And the only reason I offer the amendment is to show or try to demonstrate what this bill is doing and how ridiculous it would be if it applied across the board. I would ask the permission of the body to withdraw Amendment Number 1, Mr. Speaker.
Amendment Number 1 is in possession of the House. Are there any objections to withdrawal of Amendment Number 1? Hearing no objections, Amendment Number 1 has been withdrawn. Are there any further amendments pending?
I have none on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Judiciary CS for House Bill 389 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objection to the motion to advance from second to third reading? Hearing none, would the clerk please give that bill its third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill 389, Judiciary, by the Judiciary Committee. An act relating to recovery of state costs for oil and hazardous substance releases and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. Representative Pettyjohn.
Mr. Speaker, I would ask the members to look at Article 1, Section 7 of the Alaska Constitution, which states, "No person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law." I suggest that when you allow the state to lien property without any process of law, much less due process, you're in violation of the Constitution of the state. Thank you.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative Hudson.
Yes, Mr. Speaker. Just maybe an explanation to me. If someone could explain to me how this interrelates with the rights of private citizens. I want to make certain that, for example, if we're going to be moving against a fish processing company for an oil spill, that fishermen, for example's rights for some of those assets are protected in advance. Can somebody explain that to me, please?
Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, this bill, if you read through it on line 12, it says the state has a lien for expenditures by the state. So the state first has to expend some money in this effort here in the oil and hazardous substance release from the fund or any other state fund for containment, cleanup, or mitigation of oil or hazardous substances. That's what we go through now. We expend the money, we go out, we try to stop it, we try to contain it, and then we have under the law the right to recover those costs from the person who caused the damage, and we have a process that we go through for that. This bill just allows the filing of a lien against the property of the person who caused the spill. And the lien in the original bill was a lien that took priority over everything else on record, and we took that out. We said, hold it, that isn't going to work in terms of the issues that the prior speaker brought up and others brought out, that if you had a mortgage on your house or a mortgage on your boat, that if something happened, the state could come in and get a priority above every other lien. We said, no, go file it, but you got to get in line. So everybody else's liens, every other mortgage, every other secured interest in that property is ahead of this. This is just is what we call the race to the filing house. That's our law in this state. Those who get there first get their liens filed. So this comes behind everything else. It also puts people on notice who are going to deal with that person in the future, that if they're going to lend money or get in a process, they look and they say, hey, there is a lien on record, there is an oil spill problem or a mitigation problem going on here, and then they're on notice, just like everybody else is on notice in your normal lien situation. You still have to proceed through the judicial process to get a judgment to collect anything. You're going to have to go to court and have to get a judgment, but we've had the problem I guess we're trying to stop, in this case, the midnight raider, the runner, the people who are liquidating assets rapidly to avoid their responsibilities in the cleanup, and give the state a chance to recover some money, which are state public funds that have been expended. We're not going to get any more back than what the state has put out in this issue, and it's, I think, a good bill, and I think it's something that we need, and it will help us immensely in terms of our cleanup of the oil and hazardous substances that we have in the state.
Representative Phillips.
Speaker, to the chairman of the Judiciary Committee, I do believe that the minority leader is bringing out a pertinent point, and I'd like to get an answer to it about the due process of private owners of property. I'd like to have an answer to that, whether the committee examined the constitutionality of this bill or not.
Any Representative Sund?
The issue here is you still have to go through court and get a judgment to collect anything. Just put a lien on there so that there's something there to collect when you get to that judgment. So you can't take the person's property without a due process issue.
Representative Frank.
Mr. Speaker, I'm just wondering, I think the minority leader has raised a good point, and I'm wondering if we're turning the tables here around, would it then require the company or the person or the owner of the property, what would they do to get the lien removed? I mean, would they have to go to court to get the lien removed? It seems like we're turning the tables here, and we didn't get into this issue up on the Finance Committee. I think there's general agreement, probably unanimous agreement, that the perpetrator of an oil spill or a hazardous substance spill should pay. But I think the due process question is a question that needs to be answered, and we do need to be consistent with our Constitution for one thing, and other law. And I don't think, at least to my satisfaction, the question hasn't yet been answered about the due process feature.
Representative Sund.
In answer to the question of how to get it removed, it's on page 2 of the bill, that when the lien has been satisfied, like any other lien, you can ask for it to be released, either partially or fully discharged, and there's also a provision for an action in court to require the lien to be released if the state refuses to file a satisfaction of discharge of the lien.
Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. What about the turning of the tables, though? Is there other places in the statute where a commissioner or a state agency has unilateral authority to file a lien without any prior due process?
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Could we please have a brief at ease?
Will the House stand at ease? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had the bill before us in third reading and under debate. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This lien concept is not a unique concept in this particular bill. There are all kinds of liens. There are all sorts of liens in Title 34 for materialmen and workers on houses. There are tax liens. There are liens for unpaid wages. And in this particular case, all the lien is a notice that there's a claim against the property that is in the recording district where the thing is recorded. And it's not effective, and I would call your attention to page 1, line 27, unless the commissioner sends a copy of the certificate by certified mail to the owner of the property and to all other persons of record who have an interest in the property. And those are beneficiaries under deeds of trust or mortgage holders in the case of personal property, chattel mortgage holders, etc. And it's got to be by certified mail so that there is some reasonable assurance that that the notice is actually received. And the concept of due process in this matter simply requires that there be actual notice given and an opportunity to contest the lien. And that second prong, the opportunity to contest and have a hearing, is taken care of on page 2, lines 6 through 11, which says that any person with an ownership interest against which a lien, in property against which a lien is recorded, may bring an action in the Superior Court to require that the lien be released. And the lien shall be released if the court finds that the owner of the property is not liable for the costs of the state in connection with the matter under litigation. And that's the normal procedure. If there's a lien against your property and you feel it's unfair, you can bring an action to remove a cloud on the title. And even if it's a state, you can bring the state of Alaska, you can bring a second count for negligence, and you can recover your actual damages and any incidental and consequential damages. This doesn't change it. It just provides a simple mechanism for the state enforcing its claim in these cases. Many times there's a vehicle or a ship or something that's about to leave, and you've got to take immediate action, or these people don't have any ties to the state. And this is very significant dollar amounts involved, and it allows the state to protect itself.
Any further debate? Representative Frank.
Yes. I guess I'm still hung up on the necessity for this. Now, I think that the majority leader gave a good example of a special case, a materialman's lien, a labor lien. We are trying to protect the laborer. We're trying to protect the materialman. We're trying to protect the mechanic in a situation where the mechanic has done work on a car, and we don't want the owner to drive away without paying. That's a special circumstance. And this may be a special circumstance as well, but I haven't seen enough evidence or any evidence to suggest that the current system, which would require that they go to the court and get a judgment, and then I think, I'm not exactly sure about this, but I think it's a judgment, an attachment, and then you can file a lien. And the compelling evidence to change the system and allow the department to automatically slap a lien on before they've even gone to court and gotten a judgment, in other words, reversing the sequence of events, I haven't seen it yet. Now, I don't know if there's examples of companies in Alaska that are spilling oil and we haven't been able to recover because they've fled the state. If there's companies that have spilled oil or other hazardous substances and they have liquidated their assets, I mean, it's not that easy to liquidate assets. If I can be shown that there are companies that are doing these things and that the courts are failing to provide injunctive relief to the state, then I may be compelled to vote for the thing. But it seems like almost like a knee-jerk reaction to legitimate concerns, to problems that I know that the Kenai area is having and other areas in the state. I think that people do want to see the perpetrators of hazardous waste and other spills pay for the cleanup. I have no problem with that, but I think it does come down to the process under which you assign those costs and the protections of those people that are being charged with these offenses. And I still don't see the dramatic evidence or the evidence that would compel me to support a dramatic shift in the rights of property owners. And also, if they're... I don't know exactly how you'd file a lien against a boat if it's spilling and leaving. I'd like to know more about that, too.
Representative Sund.
I just want to reduce this down to a somewhat of a simple example here, I guess, but in this case here, the state has spent money, right? We've gone out and spent money, and the state has a right to collect that money back through a future court action or a proceeding or sending a bill and people pay it or whatever. And this is not an overwhelming, massive change piece of legislation. This says, you know, when you spend the money and you've gone out and done the work, you can file a lien against the property owner who caused the spill, who is liable or is probable liable, for the amount of the money. And, I mean, that's pretty simple. The example that was given during the timeout here is a mechanic's lien. You take your car into a garage, and you ask to get it fixed, and the guy fixes it, and you come to pick it up, and he gives you the bill, and you say, hey, that bill's too much. I don't want to pay it. Boom, guess what right he has? He files a lien on your car. And he probably keeps your car in the meantime until you pay the bill. Now, he still doesn't have a judgment. Now, to collect money, you've got to go to court to get a judgment and get that lien. If you want to sell your car to someone else while that lien's pending, the guy's going to buy it subject to take it to subject to the lien until that issue is straightened out. This is virtually the same example. There's been some spill out there. The state could lay back and just say, hey, you clean it up, private sector, or we're going to sue you, and when we get the money from you, then we'll go out and we'll clean up the hazardous waste. It may be dissipated all over the ground. It may be everywhere by then. But we could take that posture if we wanted to as a state. We've chosen not to. We've said it's better in the public interest that regardless of who's at fault, regardless of whatever, it's in the greater public interest to go clean this up. So, boom, we have an emergency response fund. We put some cash into it every year. We go out and we try to clean it up. This just says the state, you know, has the right when they spend that money to file a lien to protect their lineup in the whole list of creditors on that person's property, the right to get the money from them. It's not an overwhelming major change of state law. And I would assert that there are priority liens elsewhere. This is not a priority lien. This is a race in time type lien. There are many other examples of this type of where you can lien people's property prior to a judgment or prior to court action. And I would just urge support of the bill.
Representative Schultz, you've been seeking the floor.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I do have a question. You know, on a particular piece of legislation, when we're talking about the recovering of costs and things, what happens when it's in fact the state of Alaska that is in fact the violator? And I can give countless examples in my district where we have sanitary landfills that have not been approved but have been in existence for 15, 20 years, and people are dumping hazardous substances into these dumps. They've been trying to get an approved area. They've been trying to get money to do it. They have contacted DEC and other agencies and told them of these, and we are not going out and trying to address those problems, and yet those sanitary, or the unsanitary, I guess is what you'd call them, landfills are being utilized. How do the people of the state of Alaska ever have recourse to come back to the state, and what is being done along those lines? Because we really do. We've got very significant problems in some of our remote road camps of DOT, for example, that do not have the proper method of disposing of hazardous waste. How do the people that reside in those areas have recourse to get the state to respond to those kinds of things? This whole landfill thing is something that has been up in the air. BLM has, for example, been trying to deal with it. BIA, the Department of Transportation, DEC, everyone has been involved in it. And that most of this stuff is on state land. So as a result of that, people are having hazardous waste put into landfills and they have asked for some kind of recourse from the state to establish some guidelines for these things, and nothing has, in fact, taken place. So is there any movement, and maybe I'm straying a little bit from the legislation because we're talking about going after the private sector on this, but what recourse is there for the people to get the state to clean their act up?
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It came to my attention just looking at this bill, something we hadn't noticed in Judiciary, that there's a technical problem on page 2, line 7. And I've had an amendment duplicated now and circulated around. We passed a bill increasing the jurisdiction of the district court in a number of different cases, including foreclosures of liens up to $35,000 last year. And the district court, as the members know, is much quicker and more expeditious in many cases than the superior court. And I would like to offer an amendment that strikes the word superior and makes it the court of competent jurisdiction. So at this time, I move and ask unanimous consent that we return to second reading for the purpose of considering a specific amendment, amendment number 2.
Okay, we have a motion to return the bill back for second reading for the purposes of a specific amendment. Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, the bill is before us in second reading. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. At this time, I move the amendment and request unanimous consent. I apologize for not catching this earlier.
Amendment number 2 has been moved. Are there objections to amendment 2? Are there objections? Hearing no objections, amendment number 2 has been adopted, and the bill is back before us in third reading and under debate. Representative Sund.
Speaker, just a brief response to the representative from Chicken and his questions about hazardous waste disposal, and sanitary landfills. He is absolutely correct. It is a major problem throughout the state of Alaska. We have sanitary land disposal problems and solid waste disposal problems throughout the state. It's a particular problem in the rural areas of the state. And the answer and the recourse the people of the state have is to ask the state legislature for the funding and the policy guidelines to deal with that. But and that is through our Department of Environmental Conservation. And they have proposed a long list of hazardous waste sites. They have a list by election district. If you want to look up everybody's election district, they have it cited out of the known hazardous waste problems in your district that you can look up and see if they've got them all or if there's some they've missed. And disposal of hazardous waste by private individuals and businesses is a very, very difficult issue in this state, and it's one area where the state could step in and help business in terms of the economy of providing a means for those who generate small amounts of hazardous waste, gas stations with batteries, dry cleaning plants with solvents, etc., to dispose of those so that we don't get into midnight dumping or illegal dumping in sanitary waste sites and others. I'm not sure what that has to do with this bill. I think if the state goes out and dumps illegally, that's our responsibility to provide the funding necessary to take care of that. Now, I guess we could lean ourselves. Maybe the DEC department could lean the Department of DOT. I'm not sure what we get out of it. We end up spending state money to go clean it up. I hope that isn't happening. But this is a simple bill that just says when you spend money, you have the right to file a lien and proceed down the road to protect your line in the whole line of creditors against property, that the state has the right to put its mark on the line to say, here's where we enter in when this person goes bankrupt or this person has to liquidate. Everybody above that line gets their money first. State gets theirs. Everybody below who files a lien after the state comes after the state and for the amount of money. So I don't see it as a big, massive step. It's just a little step in the direction of saying you can protect your line in the person's asset column. And the rest of the issues that the representative from Eagle raised, we can deal with somewhat in the next bill, and the rest of it's in the budget.
Any further debate? Representative Pettyjohn.
I'll try to be brief, Mr. Speaker. The reference has been made to other types of liens which can be filed, and this is just another lien. I think liening is a is a rather extreme remedy and one which should be limited to where it's proven to be necessary. You have a claim, the state has a claim against someone for a violation of law. The state is not allowed to lien their property unless it goes to court and gets the approval of the judge for an injunction. If a private citizen has a claim, he can't lien. You got to go to court. And I guess the bottom line is that I heard a question from the representative from Fairbanks, which has not been answered. Why is this necessary? Give us an instance. Where is it proven? Where do we have an example where the state, because of its inability to lien, has not been able to recover the costs of cleaning up a spill?
A Mason's Manual 102 about the number of times a person may speak on an issue, in particular movement of that issue before us, but the debate is such a quality that I think it is constructive. Any further debate? Representative Frank.
Thank you. I guess that means I can get back up again. I would like to, I am interested in, you know, if this is a problem that we're seeing reoccurring in Alaska, where we can't, we haven't been able to recover through the courts. We haven't been able to get a judgment fast enough before assets were liquidated, and that sort of thing, before ships left. Then I'd certainly, you know, be more willing to entertain this type of legislation. I still haven't had my question answered about how you lien a boat, an oil spill from a vessel that's, I don't even know how they're registered, frankly. But how is filing a lien against a vessel that's leaving the state, how is that going to help? How can it be done? How is the lien affected? Is there some reason there that we need to file a lien before we go to court?
Any further debate? Representative Davis.
Well, thank you, Mr. Speaker. I can't answer how we tie up a boat if there's indeed a problem and we have to keep that boat here instead of letting it go down to California or wherever that company may be headed to. But there's definitely a case that we are not able to recover the damages that are happening in our communities, and that's one of the reasons why this legislation is here. We're having problems in Kenai, we're having problems on the North Slope, and anyone that sat through budget hearings on the response fund knows that we're expending lots of funds, and we're trying to recover the cost. In some cases, we do recover the cost to the state, but often we can't find the responsible party, or we're unable to recover all the costs. So there's definitely expenditures by the state of Alaska and people that are going bankrupt, and we have no place to go, and that's the reason why this legislation is here today, and another legislation is on. It will be coming up after this to try to give the state some teeth, and that's what this legislation is attempting to do. Thank you.
Representative Sun.
Speaker, to answer the maritime issue, there are maritime mortgages, and they're very quite lengthy to deal with, and they're one of the reasons why few banks like to deal in the maritime world. That in terms of filling out a mortgage on a vessel, that are recorded and they are lienable, and you can go after them. And if you have a registered, documented vessel, it's documented with the federal government, and there's a central area where you can lien against. And if it's not a documented vessel, which many of our small fishing boats are not, they are property which is lienable against, and you can file on them. For the large vessels, you try to get them before they leave the state. I recall one case I was involved with. It wasn't hazardous waste, but a vessel that anchored outside of Ketchikan and ripped up the LASCOM or AT&T long distance line at that time, drug anchor across it, and we finally, it took a week to figure out who had done the damage, and we filed a court case against it and to give notice to the ship that they had had a suit filed and a lien filed on them that we dropped it on the ship from a helicopter just before it left the 3-mile limit in the state waters, and then we just looked for it for the next time it entered U.S. waters. It went out, took a left, and went down to Washington, and we picked it up in Washington. So it's costly, but there is methodology to do it.
Representative Hudson, you've been seeking the floor.
Basically, I think previous speaker has answered the. Having had some experience in oil spills, international as well as both federal and in the state, and on an international basis, the federal maritime law, through action from the Marshal's Office, the U.S. Marshal's Office, is normally the way these things go. But I'm inclined to support this legislation, Mr. Speaker. I don't understand all the legal merits or demerits of this, has been brought up by some of the other folks, whether or not it's truly necessary, but it seems to me as though it's pretty specific, and it is talking about property that is transitory within the waters that where oil spills occur and where action to recover or to contain has to occur immediately, lest we find some great harm to the environment around, perhaps the fish spawning grounds and things of that nature. So if this legislation is necessary in order to provide the state the opportunity to act quickly upon that kind of property, then I'm supportive of it.
Are you ready for the question? Representative Frank.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. We seem to be debating whether or not we should have a hazardous response fund. Certainly, I agree that we should have a hazardous response fund, and I don't think anybody would disagree with that. I think the focus isn't on whether the state should act quickly to respond to a spill, or whether the perpetrator should be required to pay the cost. I think it's the manner of due process and how the perpetrator is afforded, or the alleged perpetrator is afforded rights to protect their interests. It seems to me it's just too far sweeping, and still we haven't seen any evidence that I can see where, because of the lack of ability to lien, we haven't been able to recover. Now, I'm sure there's cases where a spill occurred, and because the company had insufficient assets to pay for the damage, the state hasn't been able to recover, and this won't help that one little bit. So to me, I still don't think that there's been any evidence to suggest that this will improve the state's ability to collect, because it seems to me it's a matter of timeliness. If you can go to court, get the relief that you need from the court, or get the judgment from the court, and there's adequate assets to recover, you can recover. If there isn't adequate assets to recover, you can't recover, and this won't do you any good.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 389, Judiciary Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
27 yeas, 11 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 389, Judiciary Amended, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on final passage be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objections as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the clause has been adopted. Would the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 459 by Davis, Kopanen, Navarre, Swackhammer, Gall, Sun, Davidson, Ulmer, and Brown. An act relating to liability for releases of hazardous substances. The Resources Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with the Resources Committee substitute with the same title and due pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Cotton, co-chair, concurring Cotton, Herman, Davidson, Sun, and Navarre. Hoffman has no recommendation. The Judiciary Committee has had the bill under consideration and recommends it be replaced with the Resources Committee substitute and do pass. Report was signed by Omer, Vice Chair. Concurring, Omer, Cotton, Navarre, Grunberg, and Taylor. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having Representative Phillips.
Speaker, I know it's right before a bill, but can I go up to introduction, I guess?
Are there any objections? Hearing none, proceed.
You better stay in.
In Gallery A,
a former member of this body, former Representative Don Clockson, he was about to leave, I think. I just want to introduce him.
Representative Clockson, as a distinguished member of this body and great orator, would you care to share with us a few words? Thank you. Any further guests for introduction now that we're... Okay, this brings us back down. We had one CS before us, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Resources Committee substitute for House Bill 459.
Are there any objection as the adoption of the CS Resources? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute resource has been adopted. Does the clerk have any amendments pending upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the resources CS for House Bill 459 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Any objection to the motion to advance? Hearing no objection, will the clerk please give that bill its third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill 459, Resources, by the Resources Committee. An act relating to liability for releases of hazardous substances.
Third reading, under debate. Are you ready for the question? Question is... Representative Schultz.
Mr. Speaker. For me. I do have a question. I was wondering, in some areas where there is a problem with the sewer, the water, the contamination of ground, etc., in some of our areas, where money has been requested and businesses have been cited and there has been nothing done to alleviate the problem for drainages and taking, and they have already filed for assistance from the state in getting a treatment plant or a water sewer program put in, and they know that they are in violation, that they want to do something about it. Is there anything to take the burden of responsibility away from those people that have, in fact, made an attempt to get a water, sewer, whatever it may be, system, method of cleanup or whatever in their community to clean their water up? Has anything been done to take the burden of responsibility away from those people? Monies that have been requested from the legislature that have not come through?
Representative Davis.
Actually, I thought Representative Chicken was going to ask a question related to his earlier question about liability and if people in the those communities could sue for damages if there was a imminent threat, and I was going to give him a affirmative response to that. As far as a water and sewer project and or something that's ongoing, I don't really think that this... this legislation would pertain exactly to that. What this legislation really does is just more clearly define the statutes in regard to liability for the releases of hazardous substance. But I don't think it's provides any kind of relief for someone that's in the process of doing a cleanup. I hope that answers your question, Representative Schultz.
Any further debate? Representative Frank.
Yes, I have a question. On page 2, paragraph 5 there on line 5, it talks about the strict liability. I mean, we are talking about strict liability here, I should say. And it talks about the liability of a person who transported or accepted the hazardous substance for transport to the facility, vessel, or site from which the release occurred or was threatened to occur, if the person selected the facility, vessel, or site. And my question is, what does that mean, if the person selected the facility, vessel, or site?
Representative Davis?
Okay, what that really means is, let's say we have a hazardous substance and you've given it to someone that's going to transport it, but you don't, the owner doesn't know where it's going to go. The transporter is taking it from you, and he's taking it to a facility, but the owner doesn't know where it's going. The transporter says, I'll take it, I'm going to take it to a facility. Then that transporter would then be the liable party, not the original owner. There was a concern about someone that released, that took a substance and gave it to the transporter. Then if the transporter says, I am going to take it to a licensed facility, but he didn't tell the original person, the generator of that, then that person would then be the responsible party.
So if you had an opportunity to, if you're, let's say you're a trucking company and you had an opportunity to transport a hazardous substance, and you were going to transport it to one of several acceptable legal places for disposition of the hazardous substance, and you selected the one, then you could be held liable if they didn't properly dispose of it. And if they improperly disposed of it, you could be held 100% liable, even though you might only... How are we going to get into the joint and several liability? How is that going to be?
Representative Davis?
Well, the liability would be determined in a court of law. So I couldn't really tell how much liability would be for the transporter, but it would certainly put the burden to that transporter to make sure that he either selected a good facility. By the way, what this legislation does in part is adopt federal legislation that was adopted. But there is, aside from our strict liability statutes, there's already common law statutes which would cover, they would probably be liable anyway, but it's not as clearly defined in our statutes. The strict liability statutes that's on the books now would not have a definition here at all.
Representative Martin.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. A question to the sponsor or sponsors. On page 2, line 23, we have an interesting statement, subsection C, an act of God. And often we blame God for things or we praise Him for things, but we've never been able to determine in court what was an act of God. I was wondering if it may be that we also have the separation of church and state too, but if they may mean an act of nature, which is usually referred to in these things.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I asked that exact question in the Judiciary Committee, and the answer is that there is some pretty substantive case law that has been developed that answers that question.
Like AIDS?
Representative Schultz.
Well, I was just going to follow up on the question. On that very subject, and I won't spend any time on it, but I was wondering if an act of war is not an act of God. Our crusades and so on and so forth were fought in the name of religion. So there's been a lot of wars fought in the name of religion, and I'm wondering if that is not an act of God. But just wondering why the two were separated. But the other thing, I was serious about this, hazardous substances, when we're talking about them. Now, the people in the Glen Allen area, for example, that have sewage on their lawn that's coming out of the side of hills and things of that nature, consider that a hazardous substance. Hepatitis B, so on and so forth. There's lots of diseases, typhoid and everything else. And they consider that a hazardous substance. And I was very serious when I asked that question. When people have, in fact, been cited for the discharge of what some people are considering a hazardous waste, is there any protection for them if they're trying to do something?
Representative Davis.
Yeah, thank you, Speaker. Actually, a hazardous substance, there is in your packet a definition of a hazardous substance, and it is an element or compound that enters in or upon the water surface or subsurface of the state that presents an imminent and substantial danger to the public health or welfare. So I suppose it's actually a pretty broad definition of what a hazardous substance is. I don't know if we can stretch it to what's on the lawns in Glen Allen, but perhaps.
Okay, this is supposed to be a very formal body, and the form of debate is getting very much like a dialogue, and we can appreciate the informality here and the information that is exchanged, but let's pull it back within the realms and the operation of Mason's Manual and Uniform Rules. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. To specifically answer the question from the representative from District 13, in the judiciary debate when the representative from District 5 asked the question concerning Act of God, it was pointed out that Section 1 of this particular bill simply repeals and reenacts present law, which is AS 4603822, and the term Act of God presently appears in that section. This is not a change at all. And the very next section, AS 4603826, subsection 1, defines Act of God to mean an act of nature which is unforeseeable in kind or degree. And I believe that's in accord with the common law definition of that term. With respect to the term hazardous substance, that is found presently in AS 4603826, subsection 4, and it also includes the term oil. So that is already defined in the existing statute, as well as the definition that the prime sponsor gave.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 459, Resources, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire? The clerk void the roll. During the roll call vote, there is to be no movement and people leaving or discussing the issue. Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 459, Resources, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Representative Sun, the roll is open for you. Does any other member wish to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
33 yeas, 3 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 459, Resources, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Oh.
Will the clerk please read the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 526 by Porchot and Phillips, an act relating to the practice of social work and establishing the Board of Social Worker Examiners and providing for an effective date. The Labor and Commerce Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute with a new title and due pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Donnelly, Chairman, concurring Donnelly, Boucher, Menard, and Davidson. The HES Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with the Labor and Commerce Committee substitute and due pass Report was signed by the co-chairs, Kopanen and Ellis, concurring. Ellis, Kopanen, Hudson, Gruenberg, Hanley, and Phillips. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with the Finance Committee substitute with a new title and do pass and attaches a fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, chairman, concurring. Horschel, Larson, Frank, and Wallace. Boyer signed do pass, doesn't go far enough, good start. Having no recommendation, Adams and Gall. I have two committee substitutes on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having two committee substitutes, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 526.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the CS Finance? Hearing no objection, the committee substitute Finance has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments pending upon her desk?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the Finance Committee CS for House Bill 526 be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Any objection as the motion to advance? Hearing no objection, would the clerk please give that bill its third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill 526, financed by the Finance Committee. An act relating to the practice of clinical social work and exempting certain persons from licensure as clinical social workers and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate, Representative Porchot.
Mr. Speaker, social work licensure bills have been around this body for almost 14 years now. There has always been an interest on the part of the profession as well as consumers to secure some type of social work licensure, but the previous bills have always failed, largely because they have been overly inclusive and trying to license all forms of social work practitioners in our state. The bill before you is a modified version of those bills in that it only licenses what is termed and is a term of art, clinical social workers. This is primarily those social workers outside of state government, outside of nonprofit corporations, primarily in private practice, where the risk or the protection is greatest for consumers of social work practices. The bill has been endorsed by the social work community. There has been no objections raised by either state social workers or nonprofit social workers. Mr. Speaker, I think this bill goes a long way in protecting consumers and advancing the profession of social work.
Any further debate? Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I guess it's just a comment on the bill and just on priorities generally. On page 2 at the bottom, there is a section, excuse me, that says, a person who practices clinical social work without obtaining a license, et cetera, is guilty of a Class B misdemeanor. And I find it interesting that in this state, with the passage of this bill, we'll have this kind of penalty on the practice of social work, but at the same time, we have midwives practicing in this state without license, and there's no penalty.
Any further debate? Representative Sund.
Speaker, it's the first time I've had a chance to look at the bill, perhaps on the bottom of page 4, under the general provisions, where it gets into confidentiality of communication. Could get an explanation here. This bill did not come to judiciary, so I'm not sure what this is. If this is an exception we're making here into confidentiality that is not going to be disclosable in court, or how does that operate?
Representative Porchot.
Mr. Speaker, despite the bill not going to judiciary, a member of your committee did fine legal work on that particular provision and called to our attention a ambiguity that did indeed exist in an earlier draft. That section was reworked at the behest of a representative from Spinard in the Finance Committee to make it clear that while there is confidentiality measures ensured here, that in no way do those confidentiality measures grant social workers any special privileges in regard to court actions on the information. Perhaps the Representative Spinard can add to that, but that was reviewed and was reworked in line with other professional standards of confidentiality.
Mr. Majority Leader?
Yes, Mr. Speaker. In the House Committee, I raised that issue. And as a result, the sponsor of the bill from District 13, Vice Chair of the Finance Committee, in Finance Committee, proposed a CS which took care of the problem. And I would call the Chair of the Judiciary Committee's attention to page 3, lines 6 through 8, which states that there is no confidentiality with respect to information revealed as part of the discovery of evidence relating to a court proceeding or introduced in evidence in a court proceeding. In other words, there is no confidential client social worker privilege under the rules of evidence, and this bill is not intended to create any. And as you can see, it certainly does not attempt to amend the rules of evidence.
Any further debate? Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 526, Finance, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Will the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Will the clerk tally the board?
35 yeas, one nay.
Committee substitute for House Bill 526, Finance, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on the final passage of the Finance Committee substitute for House Bill 526 be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the effective date clause has been adopted. Would the clerk take up the next item on today's calendar?
House Bill 547 by the Finance Committee, an act relating to the investment and management of certain state funds and providing for an effective date. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it be replaced with committee substitute for House Bill 547 Finance with the same title and do pass and attaches a zero fiscal note. The report was signed by Adams, Chairman, concurring Adams, Porchot, Larson, Frank, Boyer, Gall, and Wallace. I have one committee substitute on my desk, Mr. Speaker.
Having one committee substitute, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt the Finance Committee substitute for HB 547.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the CS Finance? Hearing no objection, that committee substitute has been adopted. Would the clerk please make reference to
Amendment number 1 by Rieger and Adams to page 7, line 9, and it has been duplicated and placed on each member's desk. I think it's on Mr. Rieger's desk.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It's actually being passed out right this moment, but I move and ask unanimous consent that the House adopt Amendment number 1.
Okay. Would the House stand at ease for a brief period here until all the amendments are out? Will the House come back to order? Before the at ease, we had amendment number 1, which is now distributed before us. Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. The on page 7, actually it begins on page 6, there are a set of exemptions from the procurement code, and the one that's being added is on page 14 in the bill. You know, this bill allows procurements of investments, of investment management by the Department of Revenue, and says that that is better handled outside of the code. And what the amendment would do is apply the same standard to the investments by the Board of the Alaska Permanent Fund, and both of them would be treated equally. And it's an amendment to try to conform what is of the contracting of investment powers across both agencies.
Any objections to amendment number 1, Representative Sund?
I just want a discussion, Mr. Speaker, that this deals with the, or a clarification anyway, that this amendment deals with the delegation of investment powers between the staff, I guess, of the permanent fund and their investment. There is some concern I have anyway of that on the board of trustees of the permanent fund, that the trustees are a little different distinction than, say, directors. and that this is not going to allow a delegation of the trustees' responsibility and authority to the staff of the permanent fund. That the trustees, this is not going to change that relationship.
Any further debate on amendment number one? Are there objections to amendment number one? Are there objections? Hearing no objections, amendment number one has been adopted. Does the clerk have any further amendments upon her desk? Having no further amendments, Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the finance CS for House Bill 547 amended be considered engrossed, advanced to third reading, and placed on final passage.
Are there any objection to the motion to advance? Hearing no objection, will the clerk please give the bill its third reading?
Committee substitute for House Bill 547, financed by the Finance Committee. An act relating to the investment and management of certain state funds and providing for an effective date.
Third reading, under debate. All right, Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I think it's important to make a few comments on the bill. They're along the lines of not necessarily objections, but at least concerns, and I think people should be aware of what the bill does. The state has a number of different funds, and some of them are grandfathered in funds, such as the University of Alaska Trust Fund, the Public School Fund, and some are the funds that the state manages, like the General Fund and the various pension funds. And what this bill does, in part, is gives those funds a little higher status. It elevates them to the status of a trust fund. And there are quite a few responsibilities which go along with being a trust fund, a responsibility on the manager of the fund. It's a fiduciary responsibility. And the bill goes on to take what used to be in our statutes, which were specific investment lists, and repeals those specific investment lists and instead says that these funds shall be managed according to fiduciarily sound principles. It's an extension of the prudent investor principle and leaves open to fiduciary judgment what those investments shall be, the purpose being to give adequate protection on the one hand, but give more flexibility for a higher rate of return on the other. And if it works, I think it'll be a positive improvement. It's a major change, and I haven't had a chance to think it totally through, but I think that, you know, if it does work, I think that we'll be able to get a better rate of return and afford more protection to our funds. There's one other thing that I have some concern about, and that is we still are having employees, basically employees of the state managing the fund, but we are imposing a fairly high standard of personal liability on those employees. And I've spoken with the Department of Revenue, and they feel comfortable they will be able to get people willing to work under those standards, and that this appears in other states, which I haven't had a chance to check on, but I'll take their word for it. But it is going to be a very serious job for someone who manages this fund and be liable for a breach of prudent investing of that fund. But this is going to be put in, and that, in a way, is the heart of the protection that remains for these funds, given that the specific investment lists are removed.
Representative Sund.
Mr. Speaker, I'm going to speak in opposition to the bill at this time and probably move to reconsider it. I can recall the debates that we went through when the investment lists that we talked about and the investment of the state funds and the high standards that we wanted to put them under and protect them, that we wanted that duty. And I'm not sure that just by putting personal liability on a state employee really gets us to that point of view. And I am also not sure that you can take the handout here that if you look at that this would open investment opportunities, reduce risk, and increase earnings. I think reducing risk and increasing earnings are almost contradictions in terms. You can get high earnings, but you got to take more risk. That's the definition of the marketplace. And I just have not really had a chance to participate in this debate. I think this is one of the, probably, if I can see looking through it and what the prior speaker says, one of the major pieces of legislation that we're going to face with little or exposure to, at least a lot of us haven't seen it at all. And, I mean, this is big numbers, billions of dollars of investments at stake here. And we put those specific lists in the statutes of the type of investments that we thought the state should be involved in investing state money, so that we would not get over into this risky gray area, was this a good deal or bad deal, because the person making the investments, a state employee, there's no upside. I mean, he isn't going to get a bonus for making a bad deal. He's not going to get fired for making a bad deal or a bonus on a good deal. Now, the theory here is that we're going to make them personally liable, and I can see the handout we have says this resolution is endorsed by public employee or public employee teacher retirement boards. But I haven't seen where, are we going to require those people to be bonded? Are we going to require $1 million bond or more of somebody who's going to be involved in this? Are we going to indemnify them for being state employees if they foul up? I have a lot of major questions here, and I'm going to vote against the legislation now and reconsider it. Hopefully, you can have a chance to think about it for the next couple of days.
Representative Pershaw.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I wanted to address a couple of the concerns that have been raised. First, on the question of personal liability, as a speaker from Hillside said, indicated, this type of liability called for in the bill is no different than that required in many other fiduciary situations that are currently underway, either under common law or ERISA, which is the federal law governing the governing pension funds. Similarly, the type of exposure or the type of liability that might be facing investment officers as a profession is really no different than that facing other professions such as doctors or lawyers. I guess in the vernacular, it comes with the territory. They expect it. It is not too much to expect in this case. Thirdly, on that same point, in answer to the question raised by the member from Ketchikan, yes, the state would indemnify people for personal liability in those situations where those people acted in good faith and in prudent actions. In regard to the question of investment, I think there's been some confusion between wild investments or investments that are risky versus diversification of investments. And I think we've seen this debate in regard to our permanent fund, where, and they make an excellent case, many of us have seen this in graphic form, where when the portfolio investment is diversified, where you are allowed to invest in a lot of different kinds of investments, a variety of different financial situations, that risk can be reduced. And I think this is more on point to what this legislation provides, that we are really getting off a fairly narrow list of thou shalt only invest in X, Y, and Z, which, by the way, gold, for example, is in there, that we would be moving to, frankly, what reflects a more modern investment portfolio strategy, and one that I believe will reduce risk and increase profits.
Representative Rieger.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I didn't want to overstate the liability. It is true that you will be indemnified to the extent that you acted in good faith and I quote, prudent under the applicable standard of prudence. I've tried to check on that, and I believe that is going to be, from what I've been told, not applied that strictly against an individual employee. And I think that's not the major concern. The major concern more is on what the investments will be under the new theory or the new system. And it is true, once you've created a trust, your obligation is fairly specifically under ERISA or whatever applies, your obligation is to the beneficiaries of the trust. You are not obligated to other greater social goods and so on. And so I think that there is, in theory, a fairly good, strong protection for the fund. And my only qualification is if it works, I think it will be an improvement. And so it's a concern more than an objection.
Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not an expert in this area, but I know that my constituents and other people from time to time ask about various funds, not only these funds, but the permanent funds. They ask the question, and it's a good question, I think, why don't we invest more of our funds in Alaska? Yesterday, when we debated a bill, we talked about giving the benefit of a doubt in a certain circumstance to a certain set of facts. And what I'm wondering here is whether there's been any consideration by the bill managers and the people who've debated the bill in finance and others who are knowledgeable about this subject, whether the trustee, in this case who is the commissioner of revenue, should, in cases of equal investment quality, if there's an Alaskan investment that's of an equal investment quality with an outside investment, in that case, give the benefit to the Alaskan investment. We are talking about economic recovery. We're talking about economic development of this state. And it seems to me that we are past the point of saying that there are no good investments in this state. We should develop our resources and develop our businesses and our investments. But on the other hand, when we have funds, if they are of equal quality, I think we should look to them. And I'm wondering if this bill or anything else in the law presently says that if there are investments of equal quality, the trustee should give the benefit of the doubt and look and try to invest in Alaska. And I would ask the bill managers that question.
Any further debate? Representative Rieger.
Mr. Speaker, I just say, and I don't want to represent myself as the bill manager on this. I'm speaking because out of a concern, but on the circumstances you raise, I guess that sounds okay. But in general, I guess my answer is would be, I hope that doesn't come up as a consideration, because then you're opening yourself up for having to weigh some other benefit against what your responsibility is, and your responsibility is to the beneficiaries of that trust fund and not to any other set of beneficiaries.
Are you ready for the question? The question is, shall committee substitute for House Bill 547, Finance Amended, pass the House? Members may proceed to vote. Has any member failed to vote? Would the clerk lock the roll? Does any member desire to change his or her vote? Would the clerk tally the board?
34 yeas, 3 nays.
Committee substitute for House Bill 547, Finance Amended, has passed the House. Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent that the roll call on final passage be considered the roll call on the effective date clause.
Are there any objection as to the adoption of the effective date clause? Hearing no objection, the clause has been adopted. Representative Sund.
Speaker, I serve notice of reconsideration of my vote on committee substitute for House Bill 547, Finance.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on said bill. Representative Collins.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I request the permission of the body to return to introduction of guests?
Are there any objections? Hearing no objections, proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. It gives me great pleasure to introduce in Gallery A a long and dear friend, a professional colleague, and a constituent. Would you please help me welcome Marjorie Linder, Gallery A?
Any further guests for introduction? This brings us back to the daily calendar. Would the clerk please read the next item on that calendar? Under introduction of guests, Representative Schultz. Representative Schultz, you have the floor.
Yes, I'd just like to give notice of reconsideration of my vote on committee substitute for House Bill 459.
Notice of reconsideration has been given on House Bill 459. Would the clerk continue?
Committee substitute for Senate Bill 50, rules amended by the Rules Committee, and activating to dissolution of a municipality. The Finance Committee has considered the bill and recommends it do pass, attaches a fiscal note and a zero fiscal note. Report was signed by Adams, Chairman, signing DuPass, Adams, Porcheau, Gall, Boyer, Wallace, Brown, and Davis. Having no recommendation, Larson, Swackhammer, Rieger, and Frank. I have one amendment on my desk, Mr. Speaker. Amendment number one by Barnes to page 2, line 20, and it has been placed on each member's desk.
Representative Barnes.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move the amendment and ask unanimous consent.
Hearing objections, proceed, Representative.
Thank you.